Coming today on Negotiate Your Best Life with Rebecca Zung.
It's the same noise in your head, but it's not some kind of accident, that noise. It's designed to equip you to survive in a world. But the problem is you're surviving stuff that you just don't need to survive.
So the big questions are these. How can we navigate and negotiate every situation in our lives, in our career, in our businesses, in our relationships, and even with ourselves for our own self-worth? In other words, what if you could win every time and have no losers? Let's face it, we're not negotiating just to buy a car or for a pay raise. We are negotiating for living in every aspect of our lives. How can we do that powerfully, successfully, and victoriously? Those are the questions, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Rebecca Zung, and welcome to the time where you negotiate your best life. Hello and welcome to another episode of Negotiate Your Best Life. I'm Rebecca Zung and I'm super excited today to interview an amazing guy, New York Times bestselling author, leading personal development expert, life coach, author of the best-selling book, Unfuck Yourself, as well as Stop Doing That Shit and Do the Work, and his forthcoming book, or maybe it has already come out, called Wise as Fuck. And so this is obviously going to be a very frank, very direct conversation. You can just tell by the names of his books. So I'm really excited. Welcome, Gary.
Hi, thanks for having me, Rebecca.
Thank you. So tell us a little bit about your background. You know, how did you even become the journey to becoming the New York Times bestselling author on Unfuck Yourself? So obviously there's a story behind there.
Well, I'm originally from Scotland, which is why I talk like Shrek.
why you talk like Shrek.
So a number of years ago, probably about 15 years ago, I was, happily married. I was expecting our first son. And, I was at a point in my life where I was just kind of jaded. I was like apathetic about my life, where it was going, what I was doing. And a relative of mine actually suggested, that I go and do this personal development workshop thing. And I just thought, oh my gosh, this sounds terrible. Like a workshop. I just had no idea that I would participate in such a thing, but I did it. And it was very revealing. And it gave me like my first insight into the way that I worked, but not in a psychological way, actually a much more kind of holistic way. So that started me off my pathway to actually empower myself to kind of raise my sights a little as to what my potential could be, or some kind of possibility for myself. And what happened was, is I was getting my stuff together and I was noticing these big results in my life, and I'd increased my income and I was much happier and more satisfied, and had more peace of mind with what I was doing. And I actually started to talk to other people about what I was discovering, and I was reading and I was understanding it in a very kind of a much deeper way. So that kind of led me on this pathway where eventually I became a senior program director, actually at one of the world's largest personal development companies. And I traveled all over the world, and delivered facilitated workshops, believe it or not, to thousands and thousands of people. And I did that for a number of years. And then the last 5 or 6 years, it's been more about myself and my writing, and kind of giving away what I've been learning and what I'm continuing to learn.
Awesome. So, you wrote this book and it's called Unfuck Yourself. Yeah. And from what I understand, it kind of started out as like this little book that you self-published that you kind of wrote for your the people that you were coaching, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I had no idea, or certainly no sense of like, well, this is going to be a big selling book. I mean, I think that book sold over 2 million copies now.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Right. But I really wanted to, this was at a time when there weren't really many books around with a curse word in the title, right? I mean, now there's just so many of them. But at the time, there was none. Well, there was two. But one of those one of those books that had a curse word in the title. The title was badass. I mean, it wasn't even exactly a curse word, you know?
Yeah, but that's another one of those that has, right. Like, it's kind of shocking, right?
Right. But I had so many people tell me, don't do it. It's, you know, because you can't advertise it anywhere. Amazon won't let you advertise it. Facebook won't let you advertise it. But I really thought, you know, this has got to be my book. I can't, you know, I got to call it what I would call it. So I did. I released it myself, and I just went online and talked about it. You know, I would go on Facebook and talk about it. I'd go on the Twitter and talk about it. And we ended up selling, I think, 30,000 copies in 5.5 months. And then before I know it, I've got over 20 offers for the book from major publishers, and off it went, you know, and it's been kind of following on that trail ever since.
Yeah. And now you have another one. Is it out yet, or is it?
Well, I have a new audio book. It's called Ask Gary Fucking Anything. And I use a curse word not because I wanted people to get that it's really anything. You could ask me anything, right? And I'll see if I can take a stab at it for you. So I took 8 questions into the studio, and I never wrote anything. I just went in the studio and answered the questions. And it gave me a chance to kind of dive into some of my philosophy and how I see things, and then give it to people for real life situations. So it was both really challenging, but really refreshing. Like I loved doing it. It was such a great opportunity.
And so what's the basis of your philosophy? What differentiates you from other life coaches?
Yeah, I guess I'm not interested in making you feel better is fundamentally at the core of a lot of it, but it's based in existentialism, you know, in certain aspects of existentialism, like phenomenology and ontology, and which goes around the idea that you are a being, and you're a being in every moment of every day. And, you know, I'm interested in, well, how did you become this way? And what's in the way of you becoming some other way, which includes all the changes that one might want to make in life. So it gives you this really kind of unique insight into the background of people without being psychological about it, like I said, which really isn't my field anyway. But I mean, people talk about my delivery, like I speak the truth or something. I think a lot of people feel as if they speak the truth. What I often find myself saying is the sort of thing that you're uncomfortable listening to because it's so personal. But at the same time, you do know there's an element of gravitas to it that makes sense. So I guess the combination of all of that gives it my kind of unique little flavor, I guess.
Yeah. So I love the fact that you talk about ontology. And the reason why I love that is that I've had the same business coach for, I don't know, around 12 years now. And she is certified in ontology. And she was the first person I ever heard use that word.
Yeah.
And I remember her saying it's the study of being, which, right. You know, I was like, I don't really even know what the heck you're talking about. So can you talk a little bit more about ontology specifically, and what does that mean, the study of being?
Right. So one of my favorite philosophers is a guy called Martin Heidegger. He was a German existentialist from the early part of the 20th century. And he was an ontologist. Ontology was a big part of his field. So if you think of yourself, you're a human being, right? Now, most people online these days talk about their favorite human or my human, but you're missing the most important part, which is the being part, right? Because you're always being something, right? You're always being something. Being what? Being angry, being resentful, being compassionate, being understanding. Those are ways of being. What's a way of being? A way of being are certain predictable thoughts that you have coupled with an emotional state. And then you throw in the mix of some behaviors. In general terms, that's a way that you be, right? Now, as a human being, you've actually got now, as an adult human being, you've got kind of very defined ways of being, very predictable and repetitive ways that you be in life. And when you were a kid, you had a lot more of those available to you. You would be lots of different ways when you were little. But as you've gotten older, as we've all gotten older, we're more like a certain thing. So
you have one way of being all the time.
Well, it's certainly within a very tight range, very kind of predictable sense of self. Mm-hmm. So in ontology, we take not only take a look at, well, what was the pathway? How did you end up this way? Of all the ways that one could end up, we end up in a very distinct way. But then what am I missing out on? Like, what else is available to me? What if I could go into that situation and be courageous? And I'm never typically courageous, but man, what if I could be courageous there? That would be a way of being for you to explore. Like, what would life look like if you took it on from the aspect of courage?
Interesting.
Or what if I took life on from the aspect of love or understanding or compassion? So it allows you to kind of shift the context in which you participate in life.
So is that like the first step of figuring out how to unfuck yourself by going, okay, I figured out that this is my way of being. This is kind of how I wound up being.
Right. So it certainly helped. So in my second book was called Stop Doing That Shit. And in it, I actually give you a blueprint as to how you ended up the way you are. And so you have to identify like three things about yourself that you've maybe never thought about, like a certain view you have. One of them is your view of yourself. So most people, if you ask them, well, you know, what do you think of yourself? People will be fairly positive. You know, they'll say, I think I'm a good person. You know, I'm a decent, you know, I do my best. I'm a hard worker. I say, you know, but what's your opinion of yourself in your darkest corner of your mind? And then sometimes it'll come out, you know, like, well, I don't think I'm smart enough, or I don't think I'm good enough. Mm-hmm. Right. You weren't born that way. You ended up that way. You didn't pop out like, oh shit, I'm not smart enough.
Yeah.
That kind of came to you at some point in life, kind of bedded itself in with each of us, whatever we ended up with.
Well, I think it's got conclusions that you end up drawing
based
on faulty reasoning when you're 5 years old or something, right?
Right. But then it also includes, you know, but if you think about it that way, like I've concluded something about myself, okay? If I've concluded something about myself, it never goes anywhere. Like it rises, it falls, but it never moves. It never leaves me. So if what I've concluded about myself is I'm not smart enough, if I've not done the work to kind of uncover that for myself, it'll drive me in a certain direction. I'll just make decisions based on that without even checking in to see what I'm basing it on. But it includes like a bigger picture, but sure, like the your ontological makeup, how you became you, it's not only very revealing, but very freeing, because then you start to see alternatives to what you kind of got yourself stuck with.
And how does self-talk layer in with your ontological being?
Yeah. Well, you're always talking to yourself about the same stuff. Right. And you've got the same hooks and the same triggers and the same hangups and the same. I mean, you got to try on the idea that you're constantly listening for and looking for evidence that your subconscious view of everything is accurate. So in the background of your mind, it's these little triggers and I need to remember to do that. And I have to, and I can't do that. Well, I'm not going to do this. And then she said, well, that's stupid. So the whole noise in the background is shaping a certain view of the world, if you like. So that noise, you have to start checking in on that. Like, what am I saying to myself? What is that based on? Why did I tell myself no there instead of yes there? To me, that growing sense of awareness of your own automatic, that little voice in your head.
Yeah.
The more you get,
which is usually not a really smart little voice.
It's kind of like
an idiot.
Right. I mean, I would love to wake up in the morning and my little voice is like, you're amazing.
It never does. No.
It doesn't. It goes, oh shit, here we go again.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same noise in your head. But it's not some kind of accident, that noise. It's designed to equip you to survive in a world. The problem is you're surviving stuff that you just don't need to survive. You know, you shouldn't survive your job. You're not supposed to survive your marriage. You're not supposed to survive your body. But we end up with these mechanisms that we're in this kind of internal war. And so, I want people to do the right kind of work on themselves in a way that makes sense to them and allows them to get insight into themselves to free themselves up. Because ultimately, that kind of introspection is really what starts you on your way.
Coming up, more of Rebecca's conversation with Gary John Bishop on Un-F Yourself. Get out of your head and into your life.
One of the worst things I think, you can do is turn yourself into the triumphant victim. Because it still lives on.
I love that, triumphant victim. Right. Or even triumphant, you know, survivor.
Right. I mean,
you know, use a different word than victim. Right.
Right. Like, what point do I say I'm over it?
Is there something preventing you from having the happiness that you want or from achieving your goals? BetterHelp Online Counseling can start helping you today. It's a safe, private online environment, and you're matched with your own licensed professional therapist. It's all online, so no uncomfortable waiting rooms. They have therapists in all areas, including depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, trauma, anger, family conflicts, even grief. Anything you share is confidential, and it's affordable. And in fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/breakingfree. Join 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp.com/breakingfree.
Are you struggling with how to negotiate and win? Maybe you're dealing with a personality that's particularly challenging, like a narcissist or other high conflict personality, and you're feeling powerless. Make sure to download my free Win My Negotiation cheat sheet at www.winmynegotiation.com.
Take a listen to our archive, where you can learn more about how to shift your mindset in episodes such as Mind Power, How to Have a Winning Negotiation Mindset with the Negotiation Ninja, Mark Raffin.
Why is a winning mindset important?
It's critical, actually. It's not just important, it's required. In order for you to do well at negotiations, you have to believe that you can do well.
And now we return to today's show.
Yeah. So a lot of my people, my followers, viewers, listeners, subscribers, they're dealing with divorce, or they're dealing with divorcing specifically a high conflict personality or a narcissist or somebody like that. And so, you know, one of the things I talk a lot about is that the personality that is often targeted or victimized by a narcissist is usually an empathic person, but also a person who has their own sort of wounds, like maybe they deserve to be treated poorly, or they maybe had a narcissistic parent or something like that. So how does that person who just feels beat up by the world, beat up by the person in their life, like they can never win, they can never turn it around, they can't get out, there's no way out. Yeah. How did they start making these shifts in their self-talk and in their ontology?
Well, I mean, my approach to it is not going to be like the way a lot of people would approach it, because ultimately all I'm interested is in freedom. Like, can you get free? Can you get on the other side of something?
Now, are you talking about physical freedom or mental freedom?
I'm talking about we say stuff like, I should let something go, right? I mean, everybody says that, well, you'll have to get over it. Sometimes people will say, yeah, but how do you do it? Like, how do I actually get over it? How do I actually get free of something, right? And so often when we're in situations like, for instance, say a dysfunctional marriage or a dysfunctional relationship, right? The however you're framing that for yourself is how it will live on with you. So you don't get to say, oh, that was traumatic and I got da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and then free of that. You're now going to carry that around with whatever language you've used to hold it for yourself.
Right.
And that's true of all of us for all of our past. your past lives on in the kind of language you've used to capture it. Mm-hmm. So it lives on in your thoughts and that selection of words and phrases that you've used to capture it for yourself.
Yeah, and, so, and in a way, that's the only way it lives on, because it's not here anymore. It's gone.
That's really powerful. That's a powerful place to start, by the way, what you just said there. Like, really powerful. Like, it only lives on in language. Now, in language, though, you have an emotional attachment to language. So that is, in the speaking of something, both to yourself and others, your emotions will rise and fall in the language you use, right? So for some people, they'll say, oh, this has been the worst day of my life. And it might not have been, right? It might have just been a tough day. But in the language, you'll have an emotional state, or as I just called it, a way of being that matches that language. So it would do one. The first step I would say to somebody is you got to get really present, to really check in with, what's the language I'm using to talk about this? And is it empowering me? Not like, because sometimes people think, well, yeah, it makes me kind of, yeah, screw them. That's not power, right? That's more like kind of resentment. Power is when you can say, I've released myself from that. I'm no longer attached to that. That's power,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So then you really got to look at, well, what's the language I'm using and what's the language I could use, right, that would allow me to kind of put that in a better spot for myself such that I can move on. Now, it seems like sometimes people think this is just semantics, but absolutely your past lives on in the language you use to describe it, mm-hmm. right? So that's how it lives on in your life. So you got to be careful for two things. One, you might have been victimized, but it's incumbent upon you to make sure you don't become a victim, like a way of being.
Or continue right? to be.
Right. You got to, like, I might have been victimized about something. That's okay. But that does not diminish who I am as a human being.
Right.
Right. And at the same time, like, from that moment on, when you have those moments where you want to kind of look back or you want to just blame or you want to just be, because that won't serve you, by the way, in terms of fulfilling on a brilliant future for yourself. You can't keep looking back and like, they did and I should have, and that. None of that will serve you, right? That'll just grind it on and grind it on and grind it on for you. But rather than starting to put it in perspective for yourself in a place that empowers you, it's got to empower you, right? And one of the worst things I think, in my experience, you can do is turn yourself into the triumphant victim. Because it still lives on.
I love that, triumphant victim. Right. Or even triumphant, you know, survivor.
Right. I mean, use a different word for victim. Right. Like, what point do I say I'm over it, you know?
Yeah.
And that really is what you're looking for. You're looking to get to the point where you can look at that time in your life and there's no attachment for you. Like, you don't experience anything in terms of, like, negativity about it. Yeah. So that's why it's important for you to come to terms with the truth. It's important for you to tell the truth to yourself and be straight with yourself about it. And then don't give yourself permission to use it to justify your future self. So you can't give yourself permission to, like, oh yeah, well that happened, so now I'm off the hook for it. No. You can't do that, because that way it's still living on for you.
Well, the thing is, though, I think that for some people I know who are listening, they're going to be going, but I'm still in it. He's still victimizing me, or she's still victimizing me. They're still treating me this way.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so it's hard sometimes to, you know, get past the gunfire when the guns are still aiming at you.
Right. So,
you know,
but at the same time, you got to realize, like, so if you go into Starbucks, for instance, it always smells like coffee, right? There's no time you go in there and you're like, oh, it smells like an oil refinery in here. It always smells like coffee. And discourse and upset and divorce, more often than not, it's not a good smell. You got to just come to terms with, this is how this is. Now, you know, one of the things that actually kind of put me on the map a long time ago is a statement that I made online. I said, you have the life that you're willing to put up with, right? Now, that seems kind of harsh. And I know it seems harsh to people, right? But that's our big problem as human beings. It's our willingness to tolerate certain things in our lives, including ourselves, by the way. Mm-hmm. Like, I tolerate myself. I tolerate no voice. I tolerate that about me. Now, that's ultimately what'll you'll be burdened by. Whatever you're tolerating about yourself, you'll be burdened by that. You'll find a way for that to get expressed in life. Right?
Yeah.
So I say to people, look, this was a long time ago. Actually, I had a client. The guy said, you know, he was going through a divorce and it was very, very messy with him and his former wife. And then eventually I just said to him, what do you want? Do you want a fair divorce or do you want a divorce? And he said, well, I want a fair divorce. I said, okay, well, we're going to be here a while and that's fine. I just want you to know, like, that's how it's going to go. Which went on for a few more months. And he just said, I just want a divorce. And they divorced within, I think, 4 weeks.
Well, I mean, in some ways I say fair is for the Ferris wheel, because F is for the Ferris wheel or whatever, because, you know, it's fair is different depending on who you're talking to.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, every single person who comes in my office says, I don't want to fight. I just want what's fair or whatever. And then everybody has a different idea of what's fair. So they end up fighting, of course.
Exactly.
You know, so, okay. So I want to just talk about, you have this idea where you use assertions rather than affirmations.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I wanted to talk more about that. What does that mean?
All right, good. So it's a good question. So some people like affirmations, like really work for them, you know, like they just love them and they use them all the time. But I've met a lot of people in my time who just, they just don't believe them. They just don't believe the affirmation, right? Which is part of the problem with them, because the idea of an affirmation is to overcome something about yourself, right? So something about myself that if I say this often enough, it'll supersede that thing, it'll overtake it. An assertion is a very different thing. So an assertion, there's a process in an assertion. It begins with acknowledging what first is here, right? So I might think, say, I don't think I'm smart enough, right? So that might be my initial thought. And I'm kind of in that world, I'm not smart enough. I can't do it. It's too much, you know. So I acknowledge all of that. And then I ask myself, well, can I be responsible for that? That's here. Can I be responsible for that I'm in this negative state, right? When I get to that little point, which actually doesn't take like more than a minute, all right, I can be responsible for that. I'm in this negative space right now. And the very next moment, I'm going to stake a claim for myself. I'm going to like draw a line in the sand and I'm going to make an assertion about myself, right? And I'm going to act in alignment with what I'm about, with what's about to come out of my mouth. So I acknowledge what's here. I set it aside and I stake a claim right now in this moment. And in my first book, one of the things that I talked about was a state of willingness, of being willing. Like, I am willing, right? Sometimes you have to kind of get yourself there, for instance, to kind of open up the pathway for willingness to happen. And sometimes it starts with, I'm currently unwilling to be willing, right?
Yeah.
But something weird happens in language when you do that. See, when you start to, and I'll use that as an example, when you start to see life in terms of your willingness and your unwillingness, your life is no longer circumstantial.
Yeah.
You're actually opening up to the idea that you have a say in how you're going to take this on.
Yeah.
And to me, that's the beginning of all great transformations. It begins with you start to realize that you've got a say. You've got a say in your own experience. You've got a say in your level of commitment, your level of happiness, your level of joy. You have a say in it. It's not always easy, but you have a say. And when you get that toehold of having a say, that's a muscle you can work. You can grow that. You can become much more powerful with your experience of being alive.
Yeah. I think language, what you're saying is language is everything, right? I mean, I go back to The Four Agreements, the book, The Four Agreements, it talks about the power of word and be impeccable with your word. And it even talks about how in the Bible, in the beginning, there was word and the word was everything. And you know, what I'm hearing, the theme of what you're saying is your words, whether they're your thoughts or how you're actually expressing them through the words that are coming out of your mouth, is so important in shaping your destiny. Is that
critical?
Fair?
critical. You can't, people think it's semantics. People who say stuff, well, I didn't mean that when they say stuff. You know, sometimes when I'm talking to people, the truth will out, right? But they don't realize it's the truth they're saying.
Yeah.
They just think they're talking about something, but you'll hear things in there. But if you ask, if you actually just think about your average day, you say a lot of the same kind of stuff to yourself. You've got a lot of the same opinions, a lot of the same beliefs. You know, an interesting thing to me is when you ask someone about this notion of self-limiting beliefs, you don't know your own self-limiting beliefs. You believe them. It's not a self-limiting. You can see somebody else's. Like, oh, that's a self-limiting belief. That's not true. To oneself, I believe that. And all of that is wrapped up in language. Language captures life. It captures life. It captures experiences. It captures objects and time of the day and time of the year. And language captures all of that. And we're able to relay it all to each other through language. So it's a little shallow to think that our sophisticated use of language is, and somehow we're not emotionally connected to that. Of course we are.
Yeah. So you have 7 powerful assertions you use to unfuck yourself. Can you give us like what you think, just a couple of them right now? Yeah. I know I didn't ask you to like memorize them all. Maybe you have them all memorized. I don't know. But give me like one or two of your favorites.
Well, one that serves me almost every day in my life is I expect nothing and I accept everything. Now, that people sometimes hear that and they're like, oh my gosh, what a doormat, you know. But one of the things that I did notice in my life a long time ago was the kind of degree to which I was hooked by my own expectations, like how I expected things to go. And then when they don't go that way, I would get derailed. I would be like, well, what happened? And so over time, I've become much better at just kind of seeing my expectations and setting them aside so that I can just be with life the way that it is, right? If I can, expectations can really derail, for instance, a relationship. You know, we're expecting each other to be certain ways, right? And then they don't. And then we get all messed up by that. And then, you know, off it goes. So actually starting to key into some of your expectations is a big, pretty big deal. But then the other part of that is I accept everything. That is, people think if I accept something, it means I'm not going to change it. No, it means I'm no longer to be emotionally charged around it. I might still act to change that thing. I might still step in there and make, you know, serious life changes around that thing. But I'm not going to be run by it emotionally. I accept that the way it is.
That's I love that.
But at the same time, I'm changing it. But I'm just no longer going to be run.
I just love the phrase, I'm not going to be run by that emotionally. Right. Just even that right there is so powerful.
Yeah. Yeah, because you can't. And to me, that's like there's a lot right now about being aware and being woke. To me, a lot of that's not really accurate about what the whole notion of being aware is. Being aware is being aware of oneself. It's being aware of what I do and why I do and what's behind that and what are my hooks and my triggers. Where do I get derailed? Where do I get flattened? Where am I looking for something that's not there? Which we all do, by the way. We're all on the hunt for little reminders of what we should care about and not care about. So for me, awareness is really this profound awareness of oneself. And it's not like there's a point where you're at that, like a destination. It's more like that's what I do. I get a little more aware of myself because I believe that every time you uncover a little something more about yourself, it gives you an opportunity to push in a little bit more into the unknown, a little bit more into the kind of expanse of your own humanity and to really experiment with the human being that you are.
I love it. So I just recently read Tim Ferriss's book, Tools of Titans. And one of the things that I loved in his book is that he asks people to tell us what your spirit animal is. So I started asking that. So I didn't prepare you for this question. So I'm just curious, but just right off the top of your head, what's your spirit animal?
All right. That's funny because in my first book, I talked about how to stop telling yourself you're a tiger because you're not a fucking tiger. But I don't know. I mean, I guess I can't really think of one off the top of my head, but I'm thinking probably like a badger or something, like some small, angry little...
a scrappy fighter.
Yeah, scrappy little, like, you know, fighting his corner, taking on the big guys, doesn't care, you know, like that kind of deal. Yeah.
I love it. I love it. So where can people find out more about you?
On my website, www.garyjohnbishop.com. But I'm also on Twitter and on Instagram. I really love the idea of giving people stuff, you know, like insights and ideas and questions for them to really look at their life. I don't think changing your life should have to cost you a fortune. I think it's a pretty easy thing to give away to people, and I love doing that.
Yeah, you've got tons and tons of information on all of your social media outlets. Lots of free information, I noticed.
Yeah,
so for helping people. So thank you so much for being with me here today. I really appreciate it. This is so fascinating, really fascinating, especially love that you talk about ontology. That excites me so much.
Yeah, good.
All right, thank you so much. Thanks for stopping by and listening to this episode of Negotiate Your Best Life. I'm Rebecca Zung. Check back next Monday for more inspirational pearls of wisdom. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, I'd love if you would give it a 5-star rating and tell me what you liked in a review on iTunes. Also, be sure to grab your winning negotiation cheat sheet at winmynegotiation.com. And remember, today is a perfect day to start negotiating your best life.